Hello, and welcome to the Lives of Women in History. My name is April Rogers.
So, the Donner Brothers and James Reed, they were independent-minded men, but they were under the spell. They were under this influence of the Immigrant's Guide to Oregon and California. Now, back in Springfield, they bought the book and they'd taken it along so they could consult it on the trail. Unfortunately, the Immigrant's Guide to Oregon and California offered more propaganda than guidance in the 13 chapters. Most of that was the author's own experiences and musing on the wonders of the world. Only two of the chapters had any how-to-travel advice, and buried within that was this very brief mention of a shortcut. Quote, "The most direct route for the California immigrants would be to leave the Oregon route, about 200 miles east from Fort Hall, then bearing west, southwest to the Salt Lake, and thence continuing down to the Bay of San Francisco," end quote. Now, the trouble with this is that Lansford Warren Hastings had not done this route himself with a wagon train. No one had. Hastings was a lawyer, he was part visionary, and part fraud. He had these delusions of greatness. He was born and raised in Ohio, and he somehow decided that he was meant to be the president, or really the emperor, of California. And that meant when he first visited in 1843, Hastings thought that he could win California from Mexico and establish it as this independent nation. He had inspiration that might have been from Sam Houston, who was president of the Republic of Texas from 1836 to 1838, and then again from 1841 to 1844. Now, Hastings lacked Sam Houston's leadership experience. Mainly, he just wanted followers, preferably white settlers, so he could populate his would-be empire. And he returned to the United States to promote his book and to lecture about the lure of California. He praised its ideal climate and the untold riches, and he tried to steer people away from Oregon, which was more populated, and he clearly made it sound less enticing than California. Hastings had magnetism, and one observer called him, quote, "handsome, strong-faced, quick, and intelligent of speech," end quote. Now, to be fair, Lansford Hastings was not the first person to believe there was a shorter route to California. One that didn't zigzag north to avoid the Great Salt Lake Desert, but went straight west from the Rocky Mountains to the Sierra Nevada of California. John C. Fremont and Jedediah Smith, two of the earliest white explorers, searched for the Buenaventura, this miraculous stream that was said to cut through the towering, treacherous Sierra, the mountain chain that rises like a wall between California and the rest of the United States. But Fremont and Smith made their first explorations like 20 years before the Donner Party, and even they had not discovered the Buenaventura. The reason why? It wasn't there to begin with. And Reed and the Donners, they weren't the only ones who took Hastings seriously. The man in his book inspired hundreds of immigrants, maybe even thousands, to head west. However, the shortcut that the guidebook mentioned, called the Hastings Cutoff, came more than halfway into the established route. And by then, most travelers were content just to take the longer, safer, proven trail via Fort Hall to California. Now, for the Donner Party, the decision point came on this hot summer day. It's July 20th, 1846. They cross the summit of the Rocky Mountains. They go over this long, easy pass in what is modern day southwest Wyoming. They descend the Sandy River. A right turn here is the fastest way to Fort Hall. Straight on. Hastings' route took them to Fort Bridger, the Great Salt Lake, and the desert beyond. While a shortcut was untested by travelers with wagons, it promised to save up to 400 miles. 400 precious miles. And by now, the Donner Party knew they moved slowly. Their 22 wagons were lumbering along, and they tended to dawdle. One rest day here, two rest days there. They covered an average of about 11 miles a day, not the 15 to 20 that they planned. Again, the average wagon could travel only 8 to 10 miles on a good day. 12 is amazing, 15 is phenomenal, and 20, well, that's just unheard of. So after 3 months, they were barely halfway to California. So the Russell party, with whom they had been traveling, was now well ahead of them. James Reed continued to argue that the Hastings Cutoff would save them a month and get them over the Sierra Nevada by September, well before the heavy snows began. So some of the group, especially the women, continued to doubt the unknown shortcut. But Virginia's father played his winning card and, quote, open letter, end quote, from Hastings himself. The letter had been delivered about a week earlier by a passing traveler. The guidebook author, who was leading other immigrants to California, was ahead of the Donner Party by a few days. Now, in his letter, Hastings promised to backtrack toward Fort Bridger and personally escort the rest of the travelers through the shortcut. What more assurance did James Reed need than that? No one can ask any more or want any more. So the group takes a vote, which was standard practice in wagon trains. If the women had been allowed to cast ballots, the results might have been different. But women didn't yet even have the right to vote in general society, much less on the trail. So the majority of men, as well as the boys over the age of 14, who were regarded as adults and thus permitted to vote, sided with James Reed. One refused to accept the vote, however, Hiram Miller. He was a Donner teamster and a bachelor who had been along since Springfield. He left the group to travel by way of Fort Hall. Now, the divided feelings were evident to one observer in the words of Jesse Quinn Thornton, an 1846 pioneer who later wrote about the travels. Reed and his followers were, quote, much elated and in fine spirits with the prospect of better and narrower road to the country of their destination. Mrs. George Donner was, however, an exception. She was gloomy, sad, and dispirited in view of the fact that her husband and others could think of a moment of leaving the old road and confide in the statement of a man of whom they knew nothing, but who was probably some selfish adventurer. End quote. So, Tamison Donner and Hiram Miller were not the only people who lacked the faith in James Reed. The group took a vote on another essential decision. They chose an official captain, Amiable George Donner, known by all of the travelers as Uncle George. The immigrants under this leadership would now and forever be known as the Donner Party. So if James Reed felt slighted, he could console himself that George Donner had won only a battle, while he, Reed, had won a war. In retrospect, viewed charitably, Lansford Hastings had some scruples, perhaps. Knowing that the directions in his book were vague, he had set out earlier in 1846 to field test his shortcut. He took along two of the most famous mountain men in the West, James Clyman and Caleb Greenwood. Those two skilled explorers found Hastings' route almost impossible. The salt deserts were brutal to cross. There was no water to be had for days. The Wasatch Mountain Range, thickly forested and dotted with steep canyons, was hard to navigate on foot and horseback. Then, to traverse it in large ox-drawn wagons would be suicide. James Clyman was outraged. He was so outraged that he took it upon himself to head back along the main trail, determined to warn every advancing wagon train about the Hastings Cutoff. Now, Clyman was the one who had caught up with the Donners and the Reeds, and he had issued his anti-Hastings warning back near Fort Laramie 3 weeks before they took their vote. Remember, James Clyman and James Reed, along with Abraham Lincoln, had fought in the Black Hawk War together. James Reed should have trusted James Clyman. He knew him. He knew who he was. He knew he was honorable. But instead, he chose to follow Langsford Hastings' directions. So James' reply to Kleinman has come down through history. It resounds with the sincerity of his belief in Hastings and the depths of his own ignorance about the West. Quote, "There is a nearer route, and it is of no use to take so much of a roundabout course." End quote. Now, Virginia Reed adored her father, and she echoed his belief in their plans. Quote, "Without suspicion of impending disaster, we set out with high spirits on the Hastings cutoff." End quote. She wrote this in her diary on July 31st. Oh, and she said the weather was still hot. So Hastings waiting at Fort Bridger as he had promised. He was leading two other groups, a big train of more than 60 wagons. The Donner Party would follow their tracks and meet up with Hastings soon enough by James Reed's reckoning. Now, because Fort Bridger was the last place to stock up on supplies before California, they stayed there for a few days. They stayed long enough to make repairs to their equipment, buy new livestock, wash their clothes, and cram the wagons full of flour, sugar, and dried beef. Each day, they were assured by the fort's proprietor, the noted Western explorer James Bridger, that taking the Hastings cutoff was absolutely the right thing to do. Well, James Bridger was lying. He promoted the shortcut because he desperately needed the business it could bring. Immigrants had been bypassing his trading post since a branch road to Fort Hall, known as Caleb Greenwood's Cutoff, had been blazed 2 years earlier. Also, Lansford Hastings may have paid Bridger and his partner, Luis Vasquez, to tout his route. In fact, Vasquez had conveniently failed to deliver letters of warnings to James Reed from Edwin Bryant, who a friend that had traveled with the Donner and the Reeds part of the way, but was now far ahead. So Bryant sent back several letters urging James Reed and everyone not to take the cutoff. He had just done it with a few other men traveling solo on mules, and they found it almost impossible. Quote, "We could afford to hazard experiments and make explorations. They, those with wagons and families, could not." End quote. This was in the letter that Bryant wrote to James Reed. Now, James Reed never received those warnings, and he had no reason to suspect Bridger's honesty. Reed expected a bad patch along the shortcut, an estimated maybe 40 miles without water, and the remainder of the route he believed would be easy. So in this letter to relatives in Springfield, James Reed had this air of confidence. Quote, "On the new route, we will not have dust, as there are about 60 wagons ahead of us. The rest of the California-bound immigrants went the long route, feeling afraid of Hastings' cutoff. Mr. Bridger informs me that the route we designed to take is a fine level road with plenty of water and grass, with the exception before stated, 40 miles without water. It is estimated that 700 miles will take us to Captain Souter's fort, which we hope to make in 7 weeks from this day." End quote. Now, a smart, cautious person, Tamsin Donner, must have been agonizing over the fact that Fort Bridger was going to be the last chance to return to the main route. A few days of backtracking would bring them to Fort Hall. They wouldn't be far behind the hundreds of other immigrants, and like Hiram Miller, who had gone that way, but their course was set now. Almost immediately, they had the kind of accident that Tamsin and the other mothers had dreaded all along the way. So, the Donner Party had escaped the possible misfortunes of immigrant trains, sudden and disabling illness, someone falling from a moving wagon, or even a small child getting lost in the crowded confusion of Independence or Fort Kearney. Their good luck was tested just west of Fort Bridger. Edward Brenn, 13, had become friends with both Reed girls, especially Patty. He and Patty were galloping side by side on horseback when Edward's pony, quote, "put one or both front feet into a badger or prairie dog burrow and took a hard fall," end quote. Now, Edward landed hard and he was knocked unconscious. And it was evident to Patty and to the others who clustered around them that his left leg was badly broken between the knee and the ankle. So Edward lived to tell and retell the rest of the story, which became a Brynn family legend. Quote, "Someone was sent back to the fort for aid in repairing the damage, and after what seemed a long time, a rough-looking man with long whiskers rode up on a mule. He examined Edward's leg and proceeded to unroll a small bundle he had wrapped in canvas and tied around his saddle. Out of this came a short meat saw and a long-bladed knife." End quote. Now, amputation of a limb was not an uncommon remedy in those days, but Edward was now awake and protesting. The boy set up a loud cry when he sensed what was about to be done. And finally, after a long discussion, he convinced his parents that he should keep his leg. The old mountain man was given $5 and he was sent back to the fort, muttering to himself for not being given a chance to display his skill as a surgeon. So Patty and Virginia lost a riding partner, but they could keep Edward company in his family's wagon while he lay with his leg splinted with wooden boards. Now, the teenager healed fast. He was back on his horse about 8 weeks later, but so much happened in between that Edward's accident seemed harmless by comparison. A few days later, they knew Hastings Cutoff was a fraud. There was no road, no trail, only the barest path through the wilderness. The most maddening of all, there was no Lansford Hastings. Some of the hills were so steep, the wagons threatened to somersault. Then the Donner Party would lock the wagon wheels, slide straight downhill, and pray. Other times, they would have to yoke all the oxen to one wagon, pull it uphill, return for the next, or they used chains and pulleys to winch themselves upward. And some of the land was so rocky that the clatter of their wheels resounded for miles. And they wondered if Indians, hostile ones, were listening and watching. So on August 6th, they found a note on a stick. Hastings wrote that because he was so busy leading the other parties, he couldn't turn back just yet. But he wanted the Donner Party to know that the trail ahead was very bad. They should wait for him to return and show them a better route. Now, even the tiniest children knew that the area they had reached was impassable. They were at the top of Weber Canyon, which James Reed described in his diary as, quote, "walls narrowed to precipices on either side of a river," end quote. So the party literally could not move ahead without plunging off cliffs. And to move the wagons, they would have to take them apart, lower the pieces over the cliffs, then reassemble the vehicles and repeat the process. Who knew how many times getting the people down seemed totally impossible? All eyes turned to Reed, Hastings' champion. Now, Reed prided himself on being a man of action, and he was swearing that they would catch up with Hastings and demand some answers. So he left on horseback with William Pike and Charles Stanton, an energetic bachelor in his 30s. So in other terrain, the trio would have galloped off in clouds of dust. Instead, they had to painstakingly pick their way down the canyon walls. The others set up camp and waited, and waited, and waited, and waited some more, and just a little bit more. Reed finally caught up with Hastings. It was their first actual meeting, but Hastings refused to return. He had his obligations to the groups he was leading after all. They themselves had suffered through crossing Weber Canyon and were not in the best shape. But of course, Hastings could suggest an alternative route. He camped with Reed one night and pointed it out from a mountaintop. Did Hastings really know this route? Even James Reed didn't trust him now. So Stanton and Pike, they rested at Hastings' camp because their horses had been taxed almost to death. And so would Reed's horse, but Reed forced Hastings to give him another. Then Reed blazed his own trail back, traveling alone and marking the trees as he went. He got back to the Donner Party, and they followed Reed's route away from Weber Canyon. Now, Stanton and Pike, where were they? No one knew, and there was no time to wait or look for them. So 1 week was lost while camped at Weber Canyon. Then the party moved in excruciatingly slow motion. Days were spent pulling the wagons down canyons by rope and tackle, chopping down trees one axe stroke at a time. The hands of the men were swollen with painful blisters from all the axe work. Their shoulders never stopped aching. The Donner Party was hacking out its own route, known today as Immigration Canyon. They cleared a path through canyons dense with willow, aspen, and cottonwoods, and day after torturous day with no seeming end. They clawed their way through the Wasatch Mountains. They faced some of the toughest terrain in the West, and the mountain man who hadn't written a book, James Clyman, he'd warned him about all of it. Clearing a trail through the Wasatch was work for even a strong young man, and they were in the minority in the Donner Party. Miraculously, on the third day in the Wasatch, some new travelers joined the Donner Party. Franklin Groves and his extended family, immigrant farmers from Illinois, they were traveling even more slowly than the Donner group. After following in their tracks for days, they had finally caught up. They brought the group in its full strength, 87 people in 23 wagons. Best of all, among the 13 Graves family members were four young men who had sufficient energy to help clear the trail. Now, then came more luck. Stanton and Pike reappeared. They were so starved, they were about to kill and eat their horses. So after they had left Hastings' camp, they'd gotten lost. And as a result, they had covered a fair part of their territory, so they could help scout the way out. Still, the Donner Party was barely advancing 2 miles a day. Some days were spent cutting through thickets or thorn bushes that slapped them in the face. Some mornings, they spent hours rolling a single boulder from a narrow creek bed in order to go forward. Energy plummeted, food supplies dwindled, anger simmered. The feeling in the group was hardly cooperative, and William Graves, son of Franklin, said this of James Reed, quote, "Reed, being an aristocratic fellow, was above working, so he had hired hands to drive his teams, and he gave orders, although no one paid much attention to him. But his wife was a lady, and the company humored him a good deal on that account," end quote. Now, Virginia Reed, she said in her diary, quote, "Finally, we reached the end of the canyon. Worn with travel and greatly discouraged, we reached the shore of the Great Salt Lake," end quote. Now, just like her father, like everyone, Virginia had this keen sense of what Hastings' empty promise had cost them. "So far, the shortcut," quote, "had taken us an entire month instead of a week, and our cattle were not fit to cross the desert," end quote. At some point, Virginia lost her pony. Now, there's no history of the Donner Party that says exactly where or when, but in recollections made years later, Virginia's pain still seemed fresh. Quote, "Every morning I would stroke my little horse's face and talk to him in this manner. I wonder what we'll see today. Take good care of me, Billy, and don't let me get hurt." He would bow his head as much as to say he would do his best. A day came when I had no pony to ride. The poor little fellow gave out. He could not endure the hardships of the ceaseless travel. When I was forced to part with him, I cried until I was ill and sat in the back of the wagon, watching him become smaller and smaller as we drove on until I could see him no more." End quote. The grueling route hastened another loss. Luke Holleran, a bachelor, died of consumption on August 25th. He must have looked like Virginia's grandmother by the end, gaunt, wasting away. But Holleran was only 25. He'd set out for California as, quote, "an invalid in search of health," end quote. His previous wagon train had abandoned him at the Little Sandy River, where Tams and Donner took pity on him and took him in. Now she was helping to bury Luke in the Wasatch. His death was not a good omen.
Thank you for joining me for another episode of The Lives of Women in History. Please consider sharing with your friends and family and leaving a review. you can send me a message at womensettlers@gmail.com, or if you use the Anchor app, you can send me a voicemail. See you next week.